In preparation for its 100th anniversary celebration in the years 1987 and 1988, Morehead State University is conducting a series of oral interviews with former students, staff, faculty members, and administrators. I am Audrey Jones, present director of external studies at Morehead State University, and today's date is Thursday, May 12, 1983. I am interviewing Eva Feldy, who completed her two-year degree in elementary education at Morehead State in 1937 and her four-year degree in 1944. Eva, perhaps we could start with your family. Where did your parents live?
Oh, we lived in Barnesville from the time I was born, and my parents lived there from my dad came about 1900, I think, to Barnesville, and my mother came from Norway in 1906. And they were married in 1909 and went to Norway on a honeymoon. Yes. And then they settled down in Barnesville. And my dad and the Thompsons and my uncle had a store called Thompson Feldy Store for until 1914, I think it was about. Mm-hmm. And then World War I, the store kind of disintegrated. And my one uncle went into the Army and my dad moved to the farm. And I was born on the farm.
I see.
And then in about 1918 in the spring, they moved back to town. And then my dad worked in somebody else's store.
I see.
He was a clerk.
Mm-hmm. Have you been back to Norway often since?
Oh, yes, quite a few times. Uh-huh. Since 1950, I've been there about 9 times, I think.
He's always kept very close ties with relatives in the home country.
Then. Well, my mother used to write to her family because she was the only one here, except for an uncle and aunt and four cousins. Mm-hmm. And two of those cousins are living.
Mm-hmm. Did your mother ever work outside the home?
Well, when she came from Norway, she was a maid. She was kind of like a babysitter, you know, live-in babysitter for the Robinson family in Barnesville. And that's where she learned English. And then she was maid at the Feldy family. That was my uncle and aunt.
And that's how she met your father.
And she met my father when she was a maid at Uncle Andrew's and Aunt Julia's.
I think that was very common for a young Norwegian woman to come over and do that. I had a great aunt who did that also. Mm-hmm. Was a maid in Minneapolis for a while.
Yeah.
Was your family a large one?
Oh, well, I have 5 brothers and 2 sisters.
I'd say that was fairly large.
Oh, I guess it was sort of ordinary in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
What was the attitude toward education in your home?
Well, my mother learned to read and speak very good English, but she didn't ever really learn to write a lot. But my dad was always reading. If he, you know, he worked at city council meeting, he was secretary of the Clay County Fair for years, and so he was always pretty busy, but he read when he was at home. He used to, and we had a library. He got, you know, all the classics. So we had a lot of books to read.
I thought it was interesting. I've done some research, you know, on those early days in Twin Valley, and I noticed in some of the newspapers printed it around the turn of the century, they listed the classics that came into the drugstore in the newspaper, telling people they're here. You know?
Oh, I didn't ever notice that.
No, but obviously your family got the classics someplace. They bought them someplace.
Like we had Bjornson and Ibsen, we had Longfellow, and we had Hawthorne, and you know all the old ones like that.
Yes,
sets of them.
Mm-hmm. And there probably was no bookstore in your town, so very probably they were bought through a drugstore.
Or some, maybe through the Minneapolis Journal. We always had the Minneapolis Journal in the days of the Journal.
Mm-hmm. So and, that might be.
Yeah.
But so you had both Norwegian classics and American classics.
Well, there were a few Norwegian books, mostly English, but translations of Norwegian authors.
Did your parents bring you up to speak Norwegian?
No, not at all.
They were trying
to break working on Norwegian.
Now, that was a fairly large family to send on for post-secondary education. Was this a problem for your parents?
I think my first brother went to work in the bank. And he later went to banker school in Madison, Wisconsin, and got a certificate for banking. Mm-hmm. And my sister went to St. Olaf 50 years ago. She graduated. And then my next brother worked his way through Concordia, and I came next. And
you went to Concordia first, isn't that right?
I went to Concordia first and then to Morehead State. Mm-hmm. And then after that, Lawrence went to Concordia a bit, and then he went to business college, and he had a job at Northern States before he went west. Northern States Power Company was working in the office. And then Florence went straight through. She worked summers, like, you know, for 25 cents an hour at the dime store in Fargo, and then she worked as proofreader at the Forum, you know, odd jobs, summer jobs, so she earned her tuition. And let's see, Norman came next, and he started out at Morehead State, and then he went to the Army, so when he came back, he had his Army education, you know.
Yes, he had the GI Bill.
Yeah, GI. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Philip went to SU. He worked summers. He worked summers working at the agronomy department at SU, and he worked on road construction, Fargo streets, and things like that. So he earned his tuition that way.
Did you ever work while you were going to school?
I worked going to school. I went out teaching, and I'd save enough to go to summer school. And then I'd go to summer school 6 weeks and then have 6 weeks vacation, and I'd go to summer school another year until I finally finished.
Is that the way you finished your two-year degree or your four-year
degree? My four-year degree.
Your four-year degree. Yeah. You really were. Did you teach at all after your first year at Concordia?
No.
Did you go to summer school that?
No, not that year.
Uh-huh. So no, you were home then during that?
No, I stayed the first summer after I was at Concordia. I stayed the whole summer with Mrs. Glenn Johnson and Glenn Johnson, who lived right across from the street from Weld Hall. He was a traveling insurance man, and he was gone a lot, so I stayed there and worked for my board and room and a few dollars a week that summer.
I see.
And then I went to Morehead State the next year.
You went to Morehead State in the fall. Then did you stay? Did you continue to live with them?
No. Then I went back. I lived with my aunt in Fargo for the first, Concordia and first MS year. And then in 1936, the family moved to Fargo, so then I was at home.
I see.
But that summer, I went to International Falls and worked as a babysitter in my cousin's house. What year was that? 1936, the summer, and I stayed up there till October. When the hunting season started, then my cousin's husband and some other hunters came down south to hunt pheasants, and I came down with them and started the winter quarter.
I see. Mm-hmm. So, now, when you were living in Fargo with your parents, what brought your parents to Fargo then? Did your father give up the...
No, my father wasn't well, and he wasn't working, and I guess they decided that, you know, if we're going to school, it would be better to be in Fargo, you know.
Yes. Now, was there such a thing as out-of-state tuition at that time? Did you have to pay more money because you lived?
No, I don't think so. It was... Was it $15 or $20 a quarter? And we had our books furnished. Mm-hmm. And you only had, you know, if you stayed at home, it was fairly simple.
Yes. So they didn't charge you any more because you happened to live in North Dakota.
I don't think so. I don't remember, but I don't think so.
How did you get over to school?
Oh, we rode the streetcar. Mm-hmm. I waited for the streetcar over on 10th Street. There's an insurance company, 10th Street and about 3rd Avenue, I think, or 2nd Avenue, 3rd Avenue. And if it was cold, I'd wait in there, and if it was not too cold, I'd probably walk down to the drugstore that was on the corner of NP and Broadway, and there'd be a whole crowd of people waiting for the streetcar to go to Morehead State.
There would be quite a group coming over. Uh-huh. Yeah. Did it stop right outside the gate at Morehead State, or did you?
Well, if it was a cold day, sometimes we could talk to the fellow to riding right up in front of McLean Hall, because there was a track there.
There was a track
so that he could come in.
Uh-huh. Went around the circle?
Or I think that it might have gone around the circle, but I think if we got as far as the front door, that was as far as we ever went.
Yes.
We're glad to get that far if it was really rainy or something.
Yes.
Usually it stopped out in front of the gate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, how about when it was time to go home? Was it? How often did it run?
Oh, it ran quite frequently.
It did.
I don't remember, but the only time I really remember waiting for it would be if something going on at night, and then we'd stand out there. And if it was cold, we'd probably do a shoddish or do something to keep warm while we waited for the streetcar. Because there were always some other people going back to Fargo, too.
Oh.
So it didn't seem to be a great problem.
Obviously, there was support for all three of the schools in this area at that time. Did you feel that there was, living in Fargo, some pressure for you to go to NDSU rather than to come to Morehead State?
Not at all.
No.
No, I didn't. I was interested in either home economics or elementary education. And I think at that time, NDSU probably didn't have elementary education. Concordia didn't have elementary education at that time.
They didn't?
No. Uh-huh. They started it quite a few years later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where was your first teaching job?
Oh, I was out in the country about 3 miles from where I was born. It was called Aggie School. Mm. And shortly after that, you know, they consolidated and the students went to town, to Barnesville, to school.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there 1 year.
Only 1 year.
1 year.
Yes.
And then that was, I learned a lot that year. And especially I learned that I wasn't really fit for shoveling coal and building a fire when I got to school in the morning and running out of water because there was no pump and things like that.
See.
So,
how many students did you have there?
I had 11 students in all grades except one, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't,
there were 11 students.
11 students. It wasn't a large group of students.
No, so that, but they were all grades, so there were many preparations.
Yes.
You know, you had to do everything for every grade.
Right.
So
when did you, where did you move next then for your
teaching? Oh, then I came to town, and I don't know how I happened to hear about Twin Valley. Oh, I think I know. Florence Larson was a good friend of our family, and she was in Twin Valley, and she said that there was a vacancy. Gretchen Rafo was moving to Morehead, I think, to teach. Mm-hmm. And so I applied for the job, and I moved to Twin Valley that next year.
What year was this now? Do you
that
remember?
Was in 1937-38, the fall of 1938.
1938.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So at Twin Valley, then I had fifth and sixth grade classes.
I see.
Combined at first, and the last year I was there, had only sixth grade.
Mm-hmm. How long did you stay at Twin Valley?
Oh, I was there for 5 years.
Uh-huh.
I was there when Mrs. Jones was senior in high school, first year.
Audrey Zuby.
Huh? Audrey Zuby was there.
Right.
She used to go up the stairs past the sixth grade door occasionally.
Right. Well, maybe we ought to backtrack a little bit and get back to your years at Morehead State. Did you find it was a handicap coming in your second year, where lots of groups formed? It was harder to make friends?
The cold lunchroom was a place where you made friends, because we all brought sack lunches. Most people just carried a sack, not in a thermos bottle and all that, you know, mm-hmm. tin mm-hmm. container. So we'd be in the cold lunchroom, which was the first room. When you came in main door of McLean, you went around the corner to the left. It's a classroom now, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. But it was all kinds of things from the time we had it for cold lunchroom until today. I think it was even a bookstore at one time.
I see. Was this close to where the faculty room was in McLean?
I don't remember.
Or was that
where
on the
faculty
second
room?
Floor?
There mm-hmm. was a sort of a faculty lounge where they had receptions right over the bridge that is between McLean and Flora Frick now. Things, mm-hmm. too.
Were you ever up there for any
oh,
occasions?
Yes. Yeah, there were times when we were invited to something up there.
Uh-huh. What types of things?
Well, reception. I don't remember what for, especially.
No. Did you have to dress a certain way when you went to those receptions? Were you expected to have...
I can't remember.
You don't remember?
I had about 3 outfits of clothes, so it wasn't great. It wasn't a great dress-up time, I'm sure.
No, it wasn't a really difficult choice for you
no,
to make
not
as,
too
far
much.
As far as what types of things you did. Yes. Now, you then went to Concordia 1934.
4 and 5.
35.
School year.
And then you came to Morehead State 1935
and 36.
And 36.
Yeah.
And you were also there part-time in 1937.
Winter quarter, 36 and 37.
Mm-hmm. Only the winter quarter of those
winter
two.
Quarter and spring quarter.
Yes, winter quarter.
Because I didn't need 3 whole quarters to complete mm-hmm. the work.
Right. What did you do in the fall then of 36?
Well, that's when I was at International Falls taking
care
of some
children.
Oh, yes,
that's right. That's yeah. right. You said you were taking care yeah. of children that time.
Yeah, that whole summer and
mm-hmm.
fall.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful time to be in International Falls.
Oh, I would
summer
imagine.
And fall.
I would imagine so. Do you remember some of your people, like Mabel Lumley, the Dean of Women? Did you have any much contact with her?
Not too much, because I think she had more to do with dormitory students.
Yes. Did you make friends with dormitory students at all?
Not so many, unless they were in Euterpe or in the women's chorus. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know too many of them.
So there was a separation. You didn't really get acquainted in classes as such. There was very little time to get acquainted there.
More in classes, I'd say, especially art classes or music classes or chorus, places like that.
Where you had some activity, you could visit a little bit more. Yes. What was your school day like? What time did it start?
Oh, well, usually I think I had an 8 o'clock class, and I was probably done by 4, and then you'd have study time, and you went to the library, which is now where the bookstore is. That was the library.
That was the library in the 30s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the big library. Mm-hmm. And
You had time off for lunch, obviously. But,
oh, yes. And we had 4 classes a day, and we had them every day. You know, maybe we had one day we didn't have one day we didn't have another. Uh-huh. But it seems to me we had like 3 or 4 classes every day, besides swimming maybe.
Uh-huh. Would they run an hour or longer than
that? I think they were like 50-minute periods.
Uh-huh.
I think so.
Well, that would leave you some time in the morning and then in the afternoon for study then.
Yes, there was
time
to study.
So it wasn't solid classes during that whole
time. And I didn't have lab periods.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any teachers that you remember as being especially helpful?
Well, I remember Marie Sorkness. She was my 4th grade student supervisor.
Mm-hmm. What type of person was she?
Oh, she was very nice and very helpful. She was a good friend of my cousin's who came before me, so she felt like she knew me too, and I would get called Irene or Gladys or Stella or Louise, according to whichever one she happened to think of instead of my own name. Because they had all graduated from here.
I see.
And they were good friends of Marie Sorkness.
A large extended family that were MSU students then.
Right. And then I remember Flora Frick, because I took swimming from her and I didn't even like to put my face in the water. So after the first swimming lesson, I went home and got a washbowl and filled it with water and practiced putting my face in the water and bubbling so that next class I wasn't scared to put my face in. And finally, in swimming class, I was the best face floater, because I could hold my breath longer than anybody else.
But practice with
probably
with the bowl
because
of
I'd been singing and singing long phrases, and I could hold my breath, so I won the face float. That was a class competition.
I see.
In the same little Flora Frick swimming pool that's still there.
I see.
And I think people still go swimming in it, but I haven't been.
Yes,
in it.
They do.
Mm-hmm. It would be fun to swim there once more.
Mm-hmm. Was she? Did you feel she was really a good instructor?
Oh yes, she was.
Mm-hmm. What type of personality did she have?
Well, she made you do things, and after you learned how to do it, it was fine, but it was a little hard swimming when you didn't know how to swim.
There were no excuses.
No excuses, no. You went over the side like a seal and into the water. There was no excuse for not doing it.
Well, the yearbooks certainly show a lot of people involved in swimming. Yeah. Was this a requirement for all
students? It was requiring.
Students?
You had to pass a swimming test of some kind.
Every student at
Moorhead
State?
You could get your degree.
I see.
Yeah, or your certificate.
I see.
So it was required.
Was this required by the state, do you think, or by the
school? I don't know, but I know that's why I took swimming. Uh-huh. And the second time I had swimming, I had it at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I had practice teaching at 9 o'clock. This was winter quarter. And I'd go from McLean Hall across over to campus school with wet hair. I don't think we had hair dryers in those days.
No, probably not.
And, Cap didn't really keep it out, so I had stringy wet hair several days a week.
How many quarters did you have to take swimming?
2 quarters.
2 quarters of it, you said.
I had 2 quarters, I think.
If you weren't proficient by the end of 2 quarters, would they require more?
I think you might have had to, or else prove that you could pass the test, if you studied practice in the summer or something.
Did you ever have swimming shows of any kind? Did you put on performances?
I don't remember. They might have, because there were good swimmers, too, and they might have had some of that swimming where you do designs in the water.
Moorhead State must have been the only school that had a pool at that time.
I think in Fargo and Moorhead there was a pool at one of the junior high schools and Fargo Senior High at that time.
Mm-hmm. NDSU didn't have a pool.
I don't think so, because my cousin Irene, who graduated from Moorhead State, was a physical education teacher in Fargo Public Schools, and she taught swimming. And one time I came up visiting, and I went swimming in those pools with her.
Mm-hmm. I know Concordia didn't have a pool.
No, Concordia's had most recently.
Right. Any other instructors that...
Well, I remember Dr. Bridges, and I don't know if it's because I kind of like ancient history, maybe. He always talked about the early Egyptians and, you know, and I did get to Egypt way back in 1956 on a spring vacation, and he always talked about Henry Breasted, I think his name was, a historian who had done a lot of research in Egypt. So I remember him for that.
I see. Did you feel he was a good teacher?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Did most of your teachers use a lecture method?
I think almost entirely, unless it was a lab class, like art class, with Miss Williams, and, you know, projects, she worked projects.
Her classes were basically something like our Art 100 today. Was she preparing you to work in the public schools with sort of craft types of things, or was it drawing?
Yeah, it was that way. Of course, when I got my degree, then I had to take art appreciation and some other art classes besides.
Yes.
But, we made things that maybe sixth graders could make.
Right. Like, go ahead.
Soap carvings, I remember. And we had to make something with a snap on it, a little purse of some kind. And mine was so small, I remember Miss Williams said, "You must not expect to have very much money because you made such a small purse."
Well, that had sort of been your...
that's the way it's been, you know, not too much money.
Yes.
Just enough to get around.
How about, did she teach you anything about the line and space color?
Perspective, all those things. Uh-huh. Yeah.
They were all a part of it.
Yeah, we had a lot of that.
Did you meet every day?
I don't think so, because we'd go up and work in our free time and work on the projects, you know, like soap carving or basket making or things like that. We didn't do it all in class.
No. Was your art room quite well equipped? Did you feel for those days?
It was up on third floor in McLean. I don't know what's up there now, but it was quite a big room, I suppose. I think right now, if there's a third hall on Bridges, it's probably cut right in the middle and become part of the hall going through.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know, is there a third hall on Bridges? Third floor.
Third floor. There's a third floor in Bridges, but not in McLean.
Oh,
McLean.
Yes, there's a third floor in McLean.
There's a third floor in McLean. I'm sure there's a third floor in McLean. I've climbed up there.
Yeah, it was a big hall. When you came
Laura
up,
Frick,
when you came up the third floor, you turned to the left,
mm-hmm.
and there was this room that was across the whole end of the building
mm-hmm.
on McLean at that time,
mm-hmm.
and that was the classroom.
Yes.
And there were cases for show, and there were mm-hmm. the statues that are now standing over in our department were up there mm-hmm. complete without hands or, you know, I mean, they had the whole, all the fingers and everything. They're kind of worn after 45 years, I guess.
Yes, yes. No, the hall that is Flora Frick Hall now runs into McLean, then it does have the third floor. But there is a place there where you only have the two floors.
Right.
And it,
mm-hmm.
that, I think that confused us.
Yeah.
How about Delcy Holmquist? Did you ever take a class from Delcy?
Never had a class with Delcy Holmquist.
How about Maud Hayes?
Maud Hayes? No, I can't remember. Unless, did Maud Hayes, was she a math teacher?
I have down here, head of the English department. That may have been
Maude
then
Hayes.
After you left. Perhaps she came
I can't remember Maude Hayes. Mm-hmm. In fact, I can't even remember who was my English teacher.
Mm-hmm. Did you have much contact with Alice Corneliuson at this time?
Oh, she was the rural supervisor. Was she? Or was she in the campus school?
I've got supervisor rural student teaching in 1937, but maybe she moved to that after you graduated.
She might have been in charge of rural supervision. Mm-hmm.
But you didn't have much contact with
her?
Well,
I was at Averill for 6 weeks. And
that's where you did your practice teaching?
My rural practice mm-hmm. teaching was at Averill, and that was a two-classroom school. You know, mm-hmm. like the first, second, third, and fourth were in one room, and the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth in another room. And I did mine in the first, second, third, and fourth.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy your teaching there?
Well, I think we had a lot of fun. It was out in the country, and I rather enjoyed country living, I think.
You must not have had to do the coal shoveling and the cleaning there, because later on you didn't enjoy the country living.
Well, we didn't because they had a janitor for the school.
Oh, that helped a lot.
And we stayed at Larson's. There was a Mrs. Larson that cooked for us, and we enjoyed, you know, living in the family. There was a little boy in the house, and over in the elevator, there, I don't know, I think were their own chickens, and we used to go over there and gather eggs, you know. It was in the spring, so it was nice. It was the last 6 weeks in the spring, like end of April and May.
So you missed the worst of the winter when you were out there practice teaching. You really didn't know what it was like to have to take care of a rural school all year long.
Except that we had a lot of snow that spring.
Oh, did you?
And I remember we saw some, I think it must have been in the news because it wasn't at television at that time, but there had been a great flood in the Ohio River, and we were having lots of snow. I don't remember if the Red River flooded that year or not.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have a, did Alice, you said our, Alice Corneliuson was your supervisor then? Did she come out there? And
she came out several times, but not
often.
Often, no.
Uh-huh. Drive a car herself, or?
She must have. I don't know how I got out there. I think maybe they took us out, too, because we didn't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I came over to Morehead State, and somebody took us out, and somebody brought us back. And I think I stayed out the whole 6 weeks. Oh, I can't remember being in.
Mm-hmm. You stayed with that family and stayed there the whole 6 weeks. Did you do any of your practice teaching in the campus school?
Yes. I did fourth grade with Mrs. Sarkness, that was Marie Sarkness, in reading and math for 1 hour a day for that one quarter.
So you were really probably taking a methods course at the same time, and then you would go over there and practice what you'd just
possibly
been taught?
I can't remember methods classes, but we used to, when we took math, then we'd probably get a little methods class with math, and we took reading. I suppose we must have had a special reading methods class, but it must have been in with that too, because we'd have short conferences, you know, about what the next lesson was and how to do this and variations, things like that.
Do you remember any of the things that you taught particularly, any units you taught?
No.
Were you frightened when you began teaching?
I don't think so.
You didn't feel that?
But I think, see, this was winter quarter, and also at the same time that I was doing my practice teaching, I think my brother got scarlet fever in Fargo, and he was put in the pest house, and the rest of us had to stay home for 2 weeks. So I missed out a bit of practice teaching, which I couldn't make up.
There was no way.
No way to make it up. So we stayed home and read poetry and plays and stories and things for a few weeks.
How many of you were home at that time then?
Well, let's see. I don't know. I suppose about six of us at home.
Six of you at home for 2 weeks.
Going various places. Yeah, mm-hmm.
But you had to all stay home those 2 weeks.
Well, I think my brother, who was working at the Ford Company, could go. And I don't know about my sister.
Why could he go?
He wasn't connected with children or something. I don't know.
I see.
But the children who were in school, I think Florence had to stay home from high school. And Norman was in junior high, and Philip was in grade school. They all had to stay home.
What was the pest house?
Oh, the pest house. That was a place where they put people with communicable diseases out in Fargo.
Was it located away from other buildings?
Yeah, it was I suppose it was out past 12th Avenue, probably on the other side of the El Zago Bowl at that time.
Was this a home?
It was a city house where they put people who had communicable diseases.
Mm-hmm. Who took care of
them? There was a nurse. I suppose that maybe there was a family who stayed there, and they fed them and kept them together.
and a nurse regularly in attendance.
I didn't ever have to go to the pest house, so I'm
so
not really sure.
You don't have any memories? You don't remember what your
brother... No, I just know that Lawrence had to go to the pest house.
Yes.
And I don't know. He must have been working at someplace.
Well, it's nice that we don't have to do that now. We won't call the hospital a pest house.
We don't. Well, there's a hospital besides, you know.
Yes, yes.
This was a special place for... Well, they wouldn't take people with scarlet fever in the hospital either.
No.
No.
How about, did you have any classes from Byron Murray?
No. I think the reason I didn't have any English classes here was that I had a full year of English at Concordia.
I see.
And I didn't have to take English, and so I hadn't any of those people.
You did, of course, work under Dan Preston then in the music area.
No, I wasn't under Dan Preston until much later. I shouldn't remember her name, who directed the Euterpe, and Maud Wink, Miss Wink.
Oh.
Yeah.
She had the
women's chorus and the Euterpe. And we used to practice maybe twice a week with that.
Mm-hmm. Was she a good musician?
Oh, I think so. She could play, you know, the piano in any key that you'd say. And she used to tell a joke about when she was working on her doctor's degree, and she had to play a piece in every key, and she was practicing the national hymn of France. And this was at some university, I don't know where she was, and she was practicing it in all keys. And it happened there was a Frenchman somewhere in the building, and he kept, every time she started over again, he'd have to stand up. And so he had told her once, why do you play that, you know? And she didn't realize that she was making him stand up so many times for national anthem.
What were her musical organizations? Fun to be in? Did you
oh,
have
yes,
a good time?
We enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Did they contain both men and women?
No, this was Euterpe was a women's chorus, and it was more a select group. It was a smaller group, and then the chorus was for everybody, you know, and we could sing in both of them. And I had see when I came over here, my first year, they had already, I think, had tryouts for the choir, because I came, I don't know, 1 or 2 days late, because it hadn't been decided yet whether I could go back to Concordia or to Morehead State or what. And so I never made the choir, but I could get into the choruses. Mm-hmm. So I did that.
You've been singing in choirs ever since, haven't
you? Oh, yes. Well, Dan Preston I had, fortunately. Even after I got my degree in 1944, went across the platform, I kept going to school summers. I'd take piano or I'd take voice or I'd take something, you know. I took violin one summer. And so this one summer I took sightseeing from Dan Preston. That must have been about 1950. It must have been the summer of 1950. And then I went to Europe. Well, I had just been doing all the sightseeing, and I got to Heidelberg, and another friend who was teaching in Heidelberg American School and I decided that we would try out for the Bachverein. So the first night at Bachverein, Herr Professor Dr. Said afterwards we should try out, so we had to sight read this Bach business, and I was really glad I had taken Dan Preston's sight reading, because I could read it off fairly well, and I got into the chorus.
Well, that's nice. How long were you there then?
I was there 2 years, two different times, so I sang 4 years with the Bachverein in Heidelberg. It was Dr. Puppin. Mm-hmm. And then later on when I came back, he died. And we all elected a new director. There were several people who directed us for one oratorio or another oratorio or another oratorio. And we all liked Herr Hubner, and so we voted for him. And he's just now retiring from Bachverein. I've seen him off and on when I've been over there visiting.
Well, that's an interesting experience. Was this a summer experience? Is this a summer choir, or did you stay there through a 12-month?
I taught school in Heidelberg from 1950, you know, August, mm-hmm. through 1952. So I was there for two full school years that year. And then I went back to Bemidji in 1952 and taught one more year, and then I got a leave. Well, Professor Smith said, you can any time come back to Bemidji. So I went to Japan for 2 years, and then I was able to transfer back to Germany, so I was back in Heidelberg for 1955, 56, 57, two school years, and I was back in the Bachverein singing with them. So,
How did you get started teaching abroad? What encouraged you? Was there was no practice teaching abroad at that time.
No,
there
wasn't. All my mother's relatives were in Norway, except the one uncle and aunt and four cousins. And we always thought, we'll go to Norway someday. Well, teaching in Germany was the next best thing. And my sister, Florence, the younger sister, was in the Red Cross in Korea and in the Philippines. And she had heard about these overseas schools that were starting to teach American children of the personnel stationed in Europe or Japan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when she came back, I suppose it was 45 or something like that, I heard about it, and I sort of put it in the back of my mind, I think, And then I wrote 1 year, and it was already too late for an interview. So I finally got early enough in 1950 in the spring. I had an interview in Minneapolis, and then I went in the fall.
Now, what is it? What was it in your background that gave you this sort of courage? A lot of people from small towns in Minnesota would not have had the courage to go abroad and teach. Was there
something? Well, I suppose being a Viking, you know, makes a difference. I think it does, because we always thought, you know, someday we're going to Norway.
Yes.
And I think the fact that our mother came all by herself with nobody that she knew except her uncle made a lot of difference.
Yes.
She could do it, I could do it.
You had a role model there in your mother.
I think that made the difference.
That made you more adventuresome than some.
Yeah.
Did you take voice from Agnes Kesey? Or?
I did one summer, or maybe two summers. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Can you tell me anything about her as a
person? Oh, I enjoyed it a lot. Mm-hmm. She was always helpful, and she'd compliment you, you know. I'm not as good, I don't know if I'm as good a singer as I was then or not, but one time she thought I should study with somebody else, you know, maybe do something more, but I didn't. Went back and say, well, that was, the last time I took from her was the summer right before I went to Japan. And when I came back after that, I didn't ever take from her. But I took several summers.
The summer schools were evidently fairly well developed in those early days then, weren't they?
Well, this wasn't, taking from her wasn't exactly summer school.
It was a private lesson.
Private lessons. Private at her home. Mm-hmm. I took two summers at her home, and then I took one summer up at Concordia when the conservatory was over Stone's Music Store. Fargo, which is not Schmitz, I think, was DeVos, and then it was Schmitz. Yes, she was a part of the conservatory, and I took some lessons there one summer.
Then what you're really telling me is that perhaps during summer schools we really didn't teach music at Morehead State.
Well,
I took
Morehead State, I took class voice
in the summers
from Dr. Wink.
Was this
other summers? You know, some summers I would take at Concordia and some summers at Morehead State. Mm-hmm. I take piano lessons from Ernie Harris at Concordia. I was one of his lowest students, I guess, but I enjoyed it. But taking piano lessons in the summer is not good because your hands are so sweaty, and they weren't air-conditioned at that time, and it was kind of hopeless. Same way with violin. You know, I took violin from some teacher at Morehead State two summers, and hot in Weld Hall. It was just, you know, your fingers would stick to the strings and your chin.
Well, sometimes now we wish we had windows we could open and we didn't have air conditioning, but you're telling us that perhaps...
Well, for piano and violin or things, it was just too hot to really do a lot in the summer.
Were there quite a few people on the campus in the summers?
Oh, quite
a lot
few,
of returning teachers?
Yes, I think a lot of people at that time were working on degrees because many, many people went through and got 2 years and then came back. Mm-hmm. One of the persons in my class was Dola Allen, otherwise known as Dolores Allen. And I grew up next door to her in Barnesville, and she was same age as my cousin Irene. And they must have finished around 1927, I think, and she'd been out teaching And she did the same thing. She came back some summers and not some summers. And in 1944, we finished together.
Mm-hmm. How many summers did you go then?
Oh, I couldn't tell.
Did you start back almost immediately?
I went 6 weeks the first summer, and then some summers I'd just stay home and play tennis and putter around the garden. And then I'd go 6 weeks another summer. Well, it probably took me just about every summer from 1937 to 43 was the last summer, and then they didn't have graduation exercises in the summer in August, so we were part of the spring 44 graduation.
I see. So, but you actually finished all your
in
coursework.
In 43. So it was just about 6 weeks of summer. Mm-hmm. Probably one summer I missed.
Was the faculty the same in the summer as the faculty that taught during the year?
Some of them were the... Well, they didn't all teach all summer. I suppose they had their summers off, too. Or they taught the first 6 weeks and not the second 6 weeks.
How large were your classes, do you remember, in the summer?
Well, when Dola and I took biology together, that was one of the last ones we took. There probably were 12, 15 people.
How large were your classes during the school year in 37 when you were
36? Oh, they were much bigger, maybe 25, 30, 35.
Yes. Now, there were obviously some differences between the time that you graduated and the time that you had started, but you weren't on campus full time. Do you have any feel for those war years at all?
Well, the war years, oh, well, no, I can't remember anything
because
special.
You really were teaching at that time during the year.
I was
only
here in the
back
summer.
In the summer, so you wouldn't have quite the feel for it.
The only thing was that the tennis courts kept moving. We always played tennis in the summer, and you come back, and there'd probably be a Quonset hut where the tennis court was, or the tennis court was something else was going there, and then tennis courts got farther and farther out. But now I know there are a couple more back here by the art department.
The Quonset huts were going up for whom?
The Quonset huts were right where Comstock Memorial Union was, and I don't know where they put up during the time when the some part of the services
military was here
mm-hmm. yes. for a few years, and they might have been put up for that.
Were
I'm
they
not
around
sure.
at all during the summers when you were here, or were they only on the campus during the
I week? Don't remember you especially don't remember about that. Them, so I think maybe they were gone when I was going to summer school.
Let's go back to the year that you were close to graduation, which was 36. Can you tell me about something about the social activities on the campus? What were some of the things that you did for fun?
As far as social activities, I really wasn't a part of them.
Was this because you lived off campus?
I think so, because, you know, we stayed for music. Well, we'd go to ball games sometimes.
Did you stay? Were you here for homecoming activities?
At homecoming, I don't see people that I went to school with.
No.
But one strange thing, one year I was taking an art class. This was, you know, maybe in the 50s or 60s even. And there was a little girl in the class, little. I suppose she was 20, but she, you know, she seemed little. And she was from Illinois. And I said, "What brings you up here from Illinois?" Well, she said, "My mother went to school here." And I asked her what her name was, and her name was Elaine Field. Now, you see, when we had, when we went to school, we had convocation every week, and everybody had an assigned seat at Weld Hall, and we all fit into the auditorium, either the main floor or the balcony. And Elaine Field, of course, sat next to Eva Feldy, and so I knew Elaine Field for that reason.
Yes.
Because every week we'd sit together. And here was her daughter back at school at Morehead State. But I never did get her mother's address, so I still don't know where she is in Illinois. But that was interesting that
yes,
Elaine Field's daughter came back to Morehead State.
Right. But how about homecoming when you were on campus, when you were here going to school? Did you go to the bonfire, the parade? Were there bonfires and
there
parades?
There were bonfires and parades.
Mm-hmm. There was a ball.
But no, I never went to any.
You didn't go
I might have gone to the football game.
Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't have come over for the bonfire.
I don't think so, not for a bonfire.
Mm-hmm.
Too far to go.
Yes. There was dancing at Morehead State and card playing at Morehead State. Was
that
this
was
a problem?
Dormitory.
Yes. Was this a problem for your family when you came here?
Well, it was no problem because I didn't belong to a sorority, and I think the sororities and the fraternities were the ones that had the parties.
Mm-hmm.
And since I didn't belong to them, I wasn't involved with any of it.
No. But did you ever hear any talk at home that you should really be at Concordia where
no,
they didn't dance?
No, never anything.
That you didn't
never
feel
heard
there was
any
problem with
well,
that?
Well, I had tap dancing. I had to buy tap dancing, and I think they were 50 cents to put those things on your shoes, you know?
Yes.
And I took tap dancing, and that was from Jesse McKellar. And my feet got mixed up. I don't know why my feet got mixed up, but they sort of did.
Yes. But obviously your family had no problems with those kinds of activities.
Well,
then.
It wasn't discussed. I mean, if it was something required for school,
it was just
a school class.
Mm-hmm. Was there a large tap dancing class that Jesse
took? Oh, that
taught?
Was a big I think I was, I was about third row, I think. I can remember, and Francis, is it Francis Flagg? I think she was in the class. And her sister, was it Helen Ortner?
Or Ines?
Ines Ortner.
Ines Ortner.
I think Ines and Francis were both in my tap dancing class, and they were both good. I remember that.
How large a tap dancing class was it?
Oh, it was a big class. It seems like when we spread out, you know, so far apart, this way and that way, it sort of filled up the little gym, I suppose, at Flora Frick. It was held in the little gym.
I see. So there was a lot of interest in tap dancing at
that
time.
No, you had to take so many rhythms, or you took so many gymnastics, or you took, and you had a choice, and I think I chose tap dancing. And I used to be able to do three blind mice. But I haven't tried it for a long time.
It's interesting. We still have dancing as a part of the PE program here, but there is no tap dancing.
Oh, well, maybe it'll come back someday.
Maybe it will someday.
Yeah, well, Justin McKellar taught tap dancing.
Was she pretty good at tap dancing?
Oh, yes. I suppose she taught ballroom dancing, too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you had a choice. And we had tennis in the spring, and spring is like some springs. You can't get out, and so we did all of our tennis in the gym, in the big gym, and we never did finish our tournament because there wasn't time we could get in the gym, apparently, and we couldn't play outside, so my friend Betty Trace and I were tied for championship. We didn't get ever to play it off.
Oh, it's a shame. May she have was, to do it yet.
Huh? She was another cold lunch person.
Oh.
Betty Trace.
You really developed a very close relationship with those people that you had cold lunch.
Oh, yeah, I see. Well, Ruth Mickelson was in the cold lunch room. There were some other Glendon people, and Betty Trace and some other people from Fargo. One of my good friends, Amart Runestad, we used to play tennis a lot, too, in the summer over Fargo Parks. She had leukemia, and she died, about 1942, maybe, something like that. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I noticed about those years in the 30s was that you really did have some marvelous lyceum programs. Do you remember anything of those?
Were they in connection with Amphion Chorus and Concordia and
yes,
and they were held down at the Armory?
Yes, they were evidently sponsored by three groups.
Uh-huh. I remember them. We heard very good people.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the ones that you heard?
I think we heard Yussi Bruerling down there. Remember him?
No, I don't.
Well,
tell me.
I think he sang there once, and I heard him. Mm-hmm. I think I went to all of those.
Mm-hmm. Evidently, the Minneapolis Symphony came occasionally.
I can't remember hearing that. But
how about the Don Cossack Chorus? Did you hear them? Vienna Boys Choir?
Well, I think I did go to most of those.
Mm-hmm. It would be hard to pull those out. You've been to so many programs
since. I've
been since
to that, so many things. I can't.
Yes,
I remember Yussi Bruerling was there, and I think I did get a signature, but you know how programs go. From 1930-something, you wouldn't...
No.
I mean, you just can't say that many programs.
No, you wouldn't be able to remember all of
them. But they did, and the Amphion Chorus sang, that was Dan Preston's. Mm-hmm. And,
I noticed that they started a Dad's and Mother's Day in 1936, 37, or 35, 36. My dates seem to be a little mixed up here. Were you ever a part of an annual Dad's and Mother's Day? Did you bring your parents over and take them around?
I can't
around?
Remember going to any of that.
You don't remember
No, the
that.
Only time I can remember my mother came over for anything, and that was when Norman was playing his last football game, and we all came.
That's that his was, senior year.
Yeah, that would be in the 50s someplace, I think. Mm-hmm. He was a football player.
Did your parents ever come over very much to games or anything
no,
of that?
No, that was the only time that most of us came, anybody who was home, came to see Norman play his last game.
Mm-hmm. One of the plays given in 1937 was The Enemy by Channing Pollock. Did you have any contact
I don't think
plays?
I don't think I stayed for any plays.
That's because you lived...
I went home and I wouldn't come back. You know, I stayed for music things, which might last till 5 o'clock, but I didn't stay for
But
plays.
Mostly you missed the evening things living off campus.
Yeah, right.
Were you aware during the 30s of what was happening in Germany? Was this something you ever discussed?
Not in the 30s, no. I didn't really realize anything about that until the Twin Valley teachers started going off to war.
I see.
You know.
Yeah, so this would have been a little later than that.
I don't think I took history at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, and that would have been before 1930, in the 36s, and there wasn't that much, I don't think.
No.
At least it hadn't made the history books at that time.
No, it wouldn't have made the history books.
No.
Did you ever have any classes where they did actually try to get you to read newspapers and be a part?
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember?
I wasn't too much interested in history except ancient, I think.
Yes. Now, the commencement in which you graduated was the 50th anniversary year, the golden anniversary year of Morehead State.
1937?
1937. Was the golden anniversary year. Were you aware of that as you graduated?
No, I don't think so.
You weren't on campus as much that year, but you were there some.
I was there, and I think I got back from Averill in time to go to it.
Uh-huh.
And my sister had made a beautiful dress, which she didn't like, and I did. And I wore it for graduation.
I see.
It was sort of a full skirt, beautiful floral pattern, and a plain blue blouse, and then a kind of little vest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a favorite dress. I still have one piece of it.
Do you?
And I remember that, and I've tried to find this in newspapers, but there's no record of it. I think Ada Comstock was on the platform.
Yes.
And I remember that as I went by, she said something about, now that's the kind of dress graduates should wear.
Is that right?
I remember that very distinctly.
Yes.
And I've looked in old, you know, well, the Mystic came out before graduation, actually, mm-hmm. So there was no record of it then.
No.
And I've never gone to the forum, but I think she was there. I kind of remember that.
Yes, she's mentioned as the speaker for that commencement.
But I don't think she was listed on it.
Oh.
Oh, maybe I don't have that one. I only have the 44. I don't have the 37 program.
Yes, that may be the case. Yes,
right.
This is the 37, June
the
7th. The
37, yeah.
June 7th, 1937.
Right.
And, of course, that year, you were really only on campus the winter quarter.
Winter quarter
and
6 weeks.
Because you were out practice teaching spring quarter, so you missed a lot of that preparation.
And I think that 6 weeks that I was here was the 6 weeks that I took art, and maybe one other class, and it was double, you know, because we were going out teaching.
Mm.
And that was the year that we took all these crafts. We made baskets, and we made soap carvings, and we made statues out of clay, and we didn't have keels then, I remember, but that was the time. And so there was more time spent up in the art department.
Yes.
Which was fun, and had a good time visiting during the time we worked.
It's one of the nice things about art classes is that you can visit at the same time. Was there a placement office at Morehead State at this time that helped you get teaching jobs? Did anybody?
Actually, they kept your records, and they would send them out. And I think they posted vacancies. But I don't know where I heard about this position out at Aggie School by Barnesville. I know my brother took me out to someplace out in North Dakota by Kindred, but it was some little country school. I don't remember. And then we went up to some Rolog school, and we went to this school, and I landed at Eggy School. And there were so few jobs that you just took the first one you got.
Yes.
And then I just heard about the Twin Valley one, and I did have the papers sent, you know. And then when I left there and went to International Falls, of course, the college sent out my papers, and when I went to Minneapolis, they sent the papers, and when I went to Bemidji, they sent the papers.
Mm-hmm. So you've taught in Minneapolis and Bemidji and International Falls and in
Twin Valley. Germany and Japan and Germany and Morehead and Germany and so forth.
Yes, you've had a very, very interesting career. What was your last teaching job?
My last teaching job was a private English school in Japan called Hyoshi English Institute. And that was a 1977-78 school year.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy that experience?
Well, very much. Mm-hmm. The only thing I didn't like about that job was that it was an after-school school in the most part. And it was, well, the ladies' classes met from 1 to 2 on like Monday and Thursday, Tuesday and Friday. And then the children came at about 3:30, and they were till 6 o'clock, and then we had a break. And then at 7 o'clock, the junior high and some senior high, and 8 o'clock, you know. So that you left there at 9 o'clock, and you were always going home in the dark, and I didn't like that part. Mm-hmm. It was all right when it was long summer nights, but not.
You were basically teaching them the English language?
English language, right.
Did you teach any English literature or history?
Well,
American
only
history
such as we had,
of,
no,
American?
Only the stories we had, and we'd have excerpts from some famous stories, you know.
Did you find them, how did they compare with your Morehead pupils?
Oh, they were learning only English, you know. Mm-hmm. And the children we'd have for maybe 25 minutes periods, and the adults or the junior and senior high, and adults for 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty difficult to compare when you...
I think so. Mm-hmm. But, the children would fool around sometimes, and, you know, they... It's just like little boys in any place. Little girls have to tell their friend something, and so...
Surely.
Can't wait until the hour's over.
No. Do you remember anything about the student center?
Student center?
Mm-hmm. There was evidently
a student center
on the campus in the 40s, but
you
again were basically here during the summers.
Well, the cold lunchroom was a student center as far as we were concerned, I think.
Yes. How many of you did you say met there?
Oh, well, anybody who brought cold lunch usually ate there.
Yeah, how many would that be?
Oh, there might be four or five tables, you know, maybe as many as 25, 30.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
These would be people...
Fargo-Moorhead. Well, there were people who lived in Fargo and Moorhead, and there were always some students who did light housekeeping, you know, maybe.
They
brought their lunch and stayed at noon.
Yeah, they lived off campus. Well, I know you're a lifelong learner and still going to college.
Still learning to weave.
Do you want to tell me some of the things that you're still doing at Moorhead State?
Well, I audit classes now because I don't need to pile up credits for this or that, usually. So I've been listening in on German this past winter. That was a one-hour course that met Wednesdays. And then part of the time when I've been home... I've been going to Norwegian on Wednesday nights. That ended last night. Well, last fall quarter, I was to the Norwegian class most every Wednesday, I think. Or was it Tuesday last week? There was a Tuesday class last fall quarter, so I went to that Norwegian class. And now I'm taking weaving from Mrs. Smimo, and that's interesting.
Yes, is she teaching for Moorhead State?
Moorhead State, spring quarter. On Thursday nights,
mm-hmm.
And I have signed up, if I'm home this summer, I will take bronze casting again. That's in July. I took it last summer. It was a lot of fun. I made statues of old games that we used to play, like cricket and hopscotch and duck on the rock and mumble peg and one more, mumble peg, cricket, hopscotch, duck on the rock. What's missing?
I don't know. I can't remember them as well.
There are five of them that I made.
Small
statues, gathering dust.
Well, you're the greatest example of lifelong learning that I know.
Yeah. And it's the kind of things to do.
It's the kind of interest in life and in learning that I think all colleges would like to instill in their students, but they're not successful with very many of them.
Well,
so
some people are busy working, I think.
Yes, well, it's a really wonderful thing.
Is
there anything else that I have missed about your life at Moorhead State that you'd like to talk about? Do you remember the presidents of the college at all?
Well, we saw them at convocations, always.
Did you have any personal contact?
Dr. McLean, I suppose, was the one who stood up and probably led something each week, or some faculty person did.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw him at that position.
What were your feelings about Dr. McLean? You have any?
No particular ones.
You didn't feel you knew him.
We had no reason for going to see the president.
No.
You know.
No.
Just like now.
Was it possible to be expelled from school in those days?
Oh, I think so. You got a pink slip, and if you got too many pink slips, I suppose you were out.
You were out, but not for behavior problems or...
I didn't hear of it.
You didn't hear of anything like that.
You know, being off and away was...
Mm-hmm. Off campus made
I didn't
made
ever hear
difference.
Anything about people being expelled or what, or dropped. I didn't know that many people, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, in those days, probably the main reason for not coming back was that you didn't have enough money to pay the small tuition.
Yes.
I think at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I surely thank you, Eva, for talking with us. And you have some very interesting observations. And
I've
enjoyed talking with you very much.
Oh, it's been fun trying to think of things again.
Right.